Hello, everyone.
Good morning.
Good morning
Or
and
good afternoon.
good whatever time you're
Depending
listening
on
to
when you're
this.
listening. It's morning for us.
It is morning for us. We're doing another random time of recording. That's how determined we are to get through these episodes by the end of the year.
Yeah, we knew we needed to record this one this week.
Yes.
And we have.
Yes. Well, we've at least started, so it's a good start.
Yeah.
And this is a really important and interesting and exciting episode to be recording and a great book to be talking about.
Yes.
Because today we are going to be talking about The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks by Rebecca Skloot. This was our September book.
Yes.
And in September, our theme was 500 scientists who read books. Scientists who read books. I can't say it. Anyway, books by people in the book club. And the idea was that we were celebrating 500 members on Discord. So 500 people in the book club. There's more of us now, but
Well, yeah.
so we wanted people to suggest, like, as many of you as possible to suggest the one book that, like, has left an impression, has taught you something important that you think people should really read. And a lot of people suggested this book, actually.
That doesn't surprise me.
No, doesn't surprise me either.
I was gonna submit this book, but I did think I thought a lot of people will.
Yeah.
So I submitted a different one just to throw a bit of chaos into the mix.
Yeah, I think it was the one book I suggested as well, and I don't often actually suggest books, to be honest, but it was, yeah, like, it was a book. So I read this ages ago. I don't know about you. When did you first read this book?
I read this in the summer of 2013, just after I'd left high school, and this is the book that made me want to do research.
That's really cool.
So, yeah.
What about it made you want to do
I don't
research?
know. I think before reading this book, I was like, I want to be a doctor because I enjoyed like that kind of side of science. But I'd never even thought about research and what research entails, and I don't know, I don't think it's a career that you're ever introduced to in high school, like at that kind of point
No.
of like working in a lab and being, you kind of know the general, oh, being a scientist, but the idea of like working with cells and doing all that kind of stuff,
Yeah.
I don't think that had even crossed my mind.
It wasn't even like on your radar kind of thing.
Yeah, so it was after reading this book, and I was like, this is really interesting. Yeah, so this book kind of sparked the interest in medical research. So I don't think I would be where I am now without this book.
That's amazing because, like, that is like we wouldn't be, the world wouldn't be where we are without Henrietta, right? So that's,
Well, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Full circle.
it's very full circle, and it's really nice because I think that's why, that is exactly what makes this book so important, is to, like, and, like, not just this book, but I think the conversations this book has sparked, and the, like, we've you know, the book was published in 2010, so there's a lot of progress been made, and a lot of
Yes.
conversations have happened since the publication. But generally, the story of Henrietta, and that the telling of that story started with that book, in actually,
Yeah.
you know, a lot of scientists becoming aware of her story and her cells and the scientific advancements that we made thanks to something that wasn't right.
Yeah.
I read that book, I think it was in the first year of my degree. So I have I have my old copy here somewhere. I bought it in a charity shop and I read it, like, and it's a copy that's clearly been read so many times, like.
Yeah, my copy is pretty. Where's mine? I've lent mine out to so many people because I'm like, you need to read this book. And from there, like, I lent it to my auntie and she was like, oh, can I lend it to my friend?
That's
I was like, yeah, of
nice.
course. So mine's pretty well read by this
That's
point,
great.
actually.
Even though we kind of preface this by saying, we're two scientists who read this like early on in our career, which I think, by the way, if you're a scientist who's early on in their career and you hasn't read it, read it, regardless of like what field.
I think if you're a scientist at any point in your career and you haven't read this
Yes,
book,
true, very true.
specifically if you're a cell biologist and you have used HeLa cells.
But also, like you said, even if you're not a scientist and
Oh, yeah.
you are interested, like the science in this is very digestible. Like it's purposefully written in that way.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, my grandma read it actually. I lent it to my grandma who knows nothing about science and she really enjoyed it. So it's so accessible to anyone, regardless of whether you have any scientific background or not.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very like, overview of the science, the things that were actually important, but the thing that's actually that important about the book is the story of Henrietta herself.
Yeah.
So yeah, go read the book. We will be talking, like we'll be using the book as like a starting point of talking about certain things in today's episode. We're not going to put a spoiler warning in today. Because, like, anyone should listen to, well, not to us talking, but to her story. Whether that's to us talking or to various other things, there's going to be loads of resources linked in the episode description. If you'd rather go there, then listen to us, or if you want to do both. But yeah, we discussed it, and I don't think we need to put any spoilers because this story should be told.
Yes, absolutely.
Before we start our discussion of the immortal life of Henrietta Lacks, we wanted to give you a quick content warning to let you know we will be talking about themes such as medical content, including mentions of cancer, HIV, COVID-19, as well as human tissue and organs, institutionalization, racism, and racial injustice. So yeah, what actually is the story? I guess we've touched on there being a woman named Henrietta and it being about some cells, but
Yes. I suppose the book itself has two stories, or three stories, I would say. I'd say there's the story of Henrietta, there's the story of Henrietta's cells, and then there's the story of the journalist Rebecca Skloot and Henrietta's daughter Deborah on this kind of mission to uncover everything they possibly can about Henrietta because it just nothing was known before the book was published, I suppose.
Within all those three topics, really, it raises so many important issues that make it like the story that needs to be discussed in terms of science ethics. What does consent mean? Like what let talking about racial injustice in scientific research, and also like those sort of like aspects of like privacy and profiting off of science in general, but off of people without their knowledge.
So for anyone who doesn't actually know the story, Henrietta Lacks was a black woman born in 1920 in Virginia. She ended up living in Baltimore and she was diagnosed with cervical cancer. And she went to Johns Hopkins Hospital for a treatment, and during one of her surgeries, her cells were taken, so a sample of her tumor was taken without her consent, and that sample was used to create the first immortal human cell line, and it literally changed the face of scientific research. So cell lines today are so ubiquitous, and there's cell lines for everything. But until Henrietta's cells, that was it. You didn't, like, that wasn't a thing.
Yeah, because like at that point, loads of people, and specifically like the lab that you mentioned at Johns Hopkins, they were trying to create a human immortal cell line that could be immortal in that context, if I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, because like you're the cell person. But it just means that it can basically be grown over and over again, and it doesn't just die of its own accord.
So they just keep growing. You can freeze them. So for context, Henrietta's cells, so this is, it's known as the HeLa cell line, are still being used very, very, they're probably the most I think they are, I think that's the fact, that they are most common, the most commonly used cell line today. Like, she died in the 50s.
51,
And her cells are still alive, they're still growing, and it's so easy to use them. Like, and I think that's touched on in that, not touched on, I think it's quite a big discussion point in the book and for the family, that you can literally go into any lab in the world, go into the liquid nitrogen store or the minus 80 freezer, and you've just got vials and vials and vials of HeLa cells. And you just thaw them out and use them, and when they get to a certain point, you're like, okay, I'll chuck these and just get new ones out of the freezer. And it's just normal. And
And it's what we do with with any cells, really, like be that, you
absolutely.
know, human or other animal cells or bacterial cells, like what I've worked with, that's just how it works. But it's that the gap between like acknowledging where they've come from, because those cells aren't a person anymore, but they came from a person.
It did come
It's
from a
wild.
person, and I think for me, the important part is more acknowledging the difference it made to the field and to science in general. Like, that is just like, you don't know how much longer it would have taken for cells to, like, for them to discover how to grow immortal cells without that sample of Henrietta's. You know, it's just.
From what I read and what's in the book is that at the point where they then cultured them, like the field of cell culture was going out of fashion because they weren't managing to grow a stable cell line like that. And it really, like at that point, it led to sort of like the proper foundations of the field of cell culture and cell biology and all the things that were they were able to do.
Like the things that cell culture has enabled is just crazy. And I mean, obviously from my side of it, for the last probably 5 years now, I've solely been working on cell biology, on like cell culture. I'm a cell biologist for the last 5 years. So the amount of different cell lines I've worked with, and obviously all mine are kind of in the context of cancer research. And ironically, it always makes me laugh because I'm like so dedicated to going to the lab and keeping my cells happy and alive, just to be able to find ways to kill them.
That's what it's like a lot of the time in science, though, right?
But that's just one tiny part of what cell biology has enabled.
Yeah, I mean, I've got some notes, and I think we'll get to that at some point during this episode, in terms of like it's important to keep in mind that there are like too many things these cells have enabled to really talk about in this episode. Like I said before,
Absolutely.
I've linked resources for you to look at various different things, but I would highly recommend like whichever field you're in or something else like science adjacent that has impacted your life, be it illness, be it an innovation of some description. There will be something that HeLa cells have enabled the innovation of, the discovery of, and that has impacted you personally in some way.
Oh,
Like
absolutely.
vaccines, for example, are like one thing to mention. And that's covered in the book as well, specifically like the polio vaccine, I believe. Where they were basically struggling to ha keep cells alive, because I think they were getting them from monkeys initially, is that right? They had to like get them from monkeys to be able to grow the virus, because to make the vaccine you have to keep growing the virus in something, which is cells, because that's where the virus lives. So, like viruses don't just grow on their own, like we would be able to grow bacteria on an agar plate, but you can't do that with viruses. So they used HeLa to be able to make the polio vaccine, which is a big deal. Like
That was like that was such a massive thing at the time, wasn't it? Like that was, yeah. It kind of it does. I think there's a lot of things in this discussion that kind of just render you a bit speechless because you're just like, wow.
Yeah, there's a lot of things in the book that I think really make you think and really like stop you in your tracks. Let's go back to talking about Henrietta as a person, because I
Because that's important.
exactly, and we have plenty of, plenty more to talk about in terms of science and science ethics specifically, because like Jen mentioned, these cells were taken from Henrietta during treatment without her knowledge. But Henrietta, she was only 31 years old at the point when she
She
died
was.
in 1951. She had five children. She was a black woman who, like, by her friends and people who loved her, like, she was described as this like amazing, like generous, warm person, who was tough but like really loving and really cared about her family. Notably as well, like one of her children, Elsie, she was taken away to like a home, and that I think really broke Henrietta as
And
well.
it was the sad thing about that as well is that it was I'm pretty sure it was because she w had epilepsy,
From
which
what I remember,
now, like,
it would be manageable. It would
is
be,
very, very manageable, isn't it? So,
and it's just like another medical injustice in her life that,
it
like,
is.
and a lot of that, like, a lot of these injustices happened because they were black,
Oh,
and
absolutely.
like the fact that, like, Henrietta went to Johns Hopkins for treatment, not because it was convenient for her, but because it was one of the only hospitals who treated black people, and that was still happening in like a separate ward and separately from the white patients. So arguably, but they were receiving worse care, and it meant, like, this is described in a lot of detail actually in the book about like the way she had to get to the hospital, and at the point where she was receiving treatment, she had to like walk to, I think, her friend's house after treatment, but she was in so much pain, and like she couldn't get treatment anywhere that was more convenient for her at a point where she was suffering from the disease, and it's so like
And I think
unjust.
as well, it the kind of lack of choice of where she could go is also highlighted because, based on the accounts from other people in the book, Johns Hopkins was not a nice place
No.
for black people to be going to go and be treated. They talk about like stories that they were told as kids to make sure you're in the house before it gets dark, because the scientists at Johns Hopkins will come and steal black children off the streets to experiment on them. So it's really sad in that context as well that it was one of her, it was the only option she had,
Yeah.
and it was not a good option. And it's crazy to think, like, obviously, you wish she had had options and she had had access to better treatment and, you know, more convenient treatment and equal treatment,
Yeah.
like all of that. And then you look at it and you think, what would have happened in terms of the site, like the big kind of cascading effect that
Yeah.
Henrietta's treatment has had on the world.
Yeah.
And it's a really a bit of a juxtaposition, is that the right word, to kind of think,
Yeah,
where
it's like a, I guess, a
from
dilemma.
such a, yeah, from such a horrible thing that happened, the world was changed. It's really, yeah.
Yeah. It's a really interesting point in terms of like the debate between, like, I guess the debate now, obviously, history happened the way it happened. The debate now being like, should we be using these cells? Like,
Yes.
and like we are still. There's an article in Nature from 2020, which would have been Henrietta's 100th birthday.
Yes.
So there was a big celebration to
Yeah.
commemorate sort of her life by her family, and I think that article discussed, and with members of Henrietta's family now, discussed whether, you know, should we be using these cells? And I think the stance of the family, from a quote from that article as well, is that they don't want people to not use them, but
Yeah.
instead to, and I'll quote this from her Henrietta's granddaughter, Jerry Lacks Y, who said that, "I want scientists to acknowledge that HeLa cells came from an African American woman who was flesh and blood, who had a family, and who had a story."
Yeah,
So
I
it's,
completely agree with that. I think
yeah.
that's the important thing. It's not about stopping using them because look at what she's done.
Yeah.
And I think it would be an insult almost to stop using them. And based on how she's described in the book, I mean, this is me, you know, what, 100 years after she was born,
Yeah.
you know, couldn't be further from Henrietta Lacks as a person. But, you know, I think, from the impression I get from the book about who Henrietta was, Henrietta wouldn't have wanted people to stop using the cells because it's her generosity, like, you know, like she's described in the book. She wanted to help people, and that's what she's managed to do. And I think of it like, you know, I'm saying she's managed to do that. It's, you know, it's her cells, but I
Yeah.
think that's how I, since reading the book, that is how I've thought of Henrietta, like of heal ourselves.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether that's right, you know, a right way to think about them, because I don't think of any other cell line that I use on a routine basis based on, you know, what the person who, like,
Yeah, what they would have wanted, or
what they would have wanted. But obviously, there's not a fierce debate around those other cell lines like there is with HeLa cells. But I agree. I think keep using them, but acknowledge the story of how they came to be and who Henrietta was,
yeah.
and educate people on that. You know, if you're going to teach a high school biology lesson about cells, teach them about Henrietta,
Yeah.
you know. Because that's what's important, I think.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think, you know, this is, it's the stance that Henrietta's family is taken, and I think they're definitely the ones to listen to.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, like in any scenario where you're talking about cells or you're using them, I think it's like we have a varied responsibility here as scientists to, like you said, acknowledge and teach and talk about Henrietta and pay that respect to her, and in the same breath, ensure that things like that don't happen again. Because yes, like it's that debate of like at what cost? Like,
Yeah, absolutely.
as a scientist, we're often like, I feel like people often think about scientists as just like, oh yeah, we're just doing whatever we want, or like we're just doing things for the so-called greater good. But the greater good is not an excuse
Yes.
to do harm in whichever way.
Exactly. And the other thing that I think gets looked over is that her family should be acknowledged as well.
Yes.
Because obviously, I suppose this kind of happened years after her cells were taken. So they'd established this cell line, it was super successful, it was being flown all around the world.
Yeah, that part is wild as well. I'm going to interject really quickly. The way they were like just sending them to people and like they were doing that, they were doing that for free to begin with, right? This
Because they had so many of these cells, they were like, yeah, just take them.
Anyway, sorry, get back to what
Yeah,
happened.
no, it is. It's wild, and it's relevant that because her family was living in poverty. Her family was living in medical poverty, like they couldn't afford any health treatments or anything. And eventually, obviously, they started making money off Henrietta, like the scientists started making money by selling Henrietta's cells, because they had so many, and people were realizing how amazing it was that they had this immortal cell line, and her family were just had nothing. And it was,
And had
and
no
then,
rights to any of that money.
well, no, because they
They
didn't
didn't
know
even know
about it.
about it at that
They
time.
didn't know at this point. I think I'm sure when she died, they technically asked her husband
Oh, for the autopsy. Yeah.
for an autopsy,
Because he initially didn't want it, but they basically convinced him.
by lying to him and saying it's so we can find out how she died, even though
They knew how she
they
died.
knew how she died.
Yeah.
Yeah. God, I've even forgotten where I was going with this now.
We were talking about the cells being
The
flown
cells being
around.
flown. Yeah, so there was all the cells. Oh, yeah. And then it got to the point where so many labs had these cells, and other cell lines could eventually be grown.
Yeah.
But Henrietta's cells were so powerful that they would just invade everything and invade other cultures
Yes, true. I remember
and
that part.
spread. And I suppose this was before such strict rules of tissue culture, of contamination and things like that. You know, now everything is done so in such sterile conditions to prevent things like this happening.
Yeah.
But Henrietta's cells started taking over, and they needed a way, scientists needed a way to distinguish which of their samples had been contaminated by HeLa cells. So they went back to the family, and this was what,
Yeah.
years later. And they went back to the family and said, we want to test your blood to see if you've got the same type of cancer as Henrietta, which was a blatant lie.
Yeah, they
And it
disguised it as
wasn't,
a health screen, which it was never that.
and it wasn't until the journalist Rebecca Skloot came along and explained to them that what they were actually doing was testing, was getting samples of their DNA to find genetic markers that would help them identify HeLa cells in culture. And even at that point, that was probably what, 20 years later, maybe
Yeah, it was
ish.
definitely more recent because if they were able to find
They had
genetic
other,
markers, they had
yeah.
that.
Well, yeah, I suppose. Or more primitive, maybe, than like
Yeah,
genetic
but it was
markers, but
definitely a little bit later because it took
it was
them.
definitely later, because I think it was it's when in the book it's Deborah talking about it. And
Yeah.
I think Deborah was in kind of her late teens and she was a baby when Henrietta died.
Yeah.
So just that, the sheer, oh, I don't even know the word for it.
The fact that they were able to lie to them. Well,
Yeah.
it's just such an injustice.
It's like, we're not going to give you any kind of information. We're not going to give you any money, even though you're living in such terrible
Yeah.
conditions in terms of like being able to access healthcare, amongst other things. But we're going to take some of your blood because we need it.
Yeah.
And I think that's just horrendous.
Yeah.
But again, it's a similar thing in that what they did there in terms of taking the blood and finding markers, that in itself probably advanced the field
Yeah,
as well.
absolutely. Yeah, for sure.
And it's just, oh.
So for anyone who's not a cell biologist, can you give us a quick overview of tissue culture, or like how does cell culture, what do you do?
Okay. Oh, the pressure's
Because
on.
we're talking about cells a lot, and I think it might be interesting for
Yes.
non-scientists or people like I've only used cells that aren't bacterial cells like a handful of times, so.
Yeah. So we have, okay, let's start from in like we have liquid nitrogen stores, so that's
Very
minus
cold.
like 200 or something. Something ridiculous like that. It's scary anyway. I hate liquid nitrogen. It terrifies me. I don't trust something that boils at minus 200 degrees.
Yeah, terrifying.
It like bubble. It's you open like this big vat and it's like bubbling at the
Oh,
bottom
that's
and
terrifying.
it's so scary. So but it's very, 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 very cold, so it preserves things very well. And that is where long-term storage of cells is. So this could just be on a normal Wednesday afternoon, go into liquid nitrogen storage, and you get out a vial, about very, very tiny little vial, with 1 milliliter frozen, and that contains cells. So you can thaw, so we thaw that out, and then you pop it into a little flask with some food, for want of a better so like meat, so we call it media, and it contains like nutrients to keep the cells happy, to keep them growing, and yeah, you wake them up almost from this long thaw and long freeze. And then they just start growing again. They start dividing, they start behaving as cells do. And then you can use them for experiments. So, in the context of what I do, you would use them to see how well they grow after different treatments. Or obviously, like I do cancer research, so I grow up cancer cells and look at how they behave, how they survive after different drugs or different types of radiation. And then obviously that, like I said earlier, that's a very small part of cell culture.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people listening probably do different types of cell culture, but I can't speak for that.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, you kind of, we do what we call splitting the cells. So obviously they're in these flasks and they're growing and they've run out of space, so you need to split them up basically,
Give them more room.
give them more room, so you just put them into new flasks and you can freeze them down again whenever you want. And that's, yeah, that's kind of the cycle. But so the cells that I tend to work with, and I think this is kind of for most cells, like when you thaw them out, once you've kind of split them
Yeah.
and use them about 20 times, you just discard them and get a new vial out from the
Yeah.
freezer. And if you're doing an experiment and need a certain number of cells, any cells in the flask that are left that you don't need, you just chuck them. And that's, I think that's an important thing to kind of highlight, is the ease of accessing cells now, and like the banks that we have from cell culture. And like my personally, I've got like a box in the freezer with loads and loads of vials of the same cell line
That you just use like for
that
your
I just go
experiments.
in and, and it's just crazy that we can just grow them up and then be like, meh, okay, done with these, chuck them. But that's just, and that's how it goes. And I have what I've not done any experiments with HeLa cells, but I have handled them and split them and kind of used them for other people. So I've seen them, and I will say the first time I looked at HeLa cells under the microscope, I cried. Luckily, I was the only one in the lab at the time. But yeah, I remember standing there looking down the microscope and thinking, oh my God, this
To
is.
actually see it is, I can imagine, is.
And it's weird that I don't, like, because I don't do that with any other cell line that I've worked with. Like I said, I've got a lot of, like, I've worked with a lot of different types of cells, and they are like patient derived
But we
cell
don't know where they
lines.
came from, right? A lot of the time.
No, we don't know where they came from. You can access, obviously, it is important to know where they came from
In
for the
terms of like
purposes
the
of
tumor and
research.
things like that, you mean?
Yeah, so I remember, like, for my PhD, I was working with head and neck cancers, and you could access kind of this cell line came from a 54-year-old Caucasian male, that kind of thing. Because again, this I can only apply this to cancer research. It's important to know those
That
characteristics
makes sense,
of a patient. But it's more, the more important things are like the genetic characteristics of the cell lines, I suppose. But you do kind of, you are aware that it's, I think the one, some of the, one of the ones I used during my PhD, it was like a 54-year-old man that had died in the 70s. And it is still, you do still kind of get that moment of
It's a person.
this was a person. But at the same time, it's just such a normal, everyday thing for me to go in the lab and use cells that it's so easy to just be like, oh yeah, this is just my cells.
I guess it's that, like the, I don't know, making sure you can do your work while also like acknowledging people's contribution, that in whichever small way, right? Like even, I mean, even with a lot of bacterial cultures, it's perhaps it's a step removed, but a lot of them were first isolated from people who had a bacterial infection. And we get our bacterial cultures from, I'm sure it's similar with your cells, but you get them from like a culture collection, and they have a lot of information about where they came from. And a lot of the time, you get a reference to like, oh, isolated from, it's like sputum sample from someone who had a lung infection or something like that. That's what it's mostly like with bacteria. But you still, like, I've often, like, you take a moment and you're like, this is like, it's actually wild. Like, for one, that like there was, it's not always a person with bacteria, but a lot of the time there was a person who was ill. And you think about, who was that person, and like the fact that those cells are still alive now.
Yeah, that's what's mind blowing, I think. It really is immortality, isn't it?
And that's sort of that immortality. Like I've made a note, and you probably understand this better than I do, but we talk about, the book is called The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks, and but what, like, why those cells were immortal, it like that's perhaps like it is difficult to understand, especially if you're not If you don't have a scientific background, and I try to get my head around it, so please correct me when I'm wrong. But from what I understand, and I'm being the voice of everyone here who doesn't have a cell biology background, but so the cells, her cells that were able to be immortalized were from her cervical cancer tumor, right?
Yes.
And they grew in the lab, like the lab assistant. She was called Mary. She was always growing the samples from the patients.
Yeah, let's acknowledge Mary a bit
Yeah.
more. Go on, Mary.
And it, like, as much as a lot of this operation wasn't the way it should have happened,
Yes.
but it was so the lab was run by Dr. George Guy and his wife Margaret, and that lab was basically, he built it himself pretty much. So when Jenny were talking about like the sterile conditions and every, like, is cell culture is very controlled, like far more controlled in terms of like asepsis and like keeping everything clean, basically, because you want the cells to not be contaminated with each other, like you were saying. Like, HeLa cells were able to contaminate other cultures, but you also don't want bacteria, which is weird to me, but makes sense. You don't want them in the cells unless you put them in there on purpose.
There is nothing worse than bacteria getting into your cells in tissue culture.
In a way, it's strange we're such good friends. But yeah, they did this a lot in that lab. Like, they had sort of like an understanding and agreement with surgeons and doctors at Johns Hopkins who were frequently giving them samples with the aim of them trying to grow immortal cells. And those cells were basically like Mary, who was usually growing them and observing them, and then finally saw with Henrietta's tumor cells that they kept growing, to the point where, like Hughes just described, like they had to split them and all that sort of stuff. Now, from what I understand, why they're immortal is that partially it's because they're cancer cells, and cancer cells like to keep growing and growing at rapid rates, and that's
They do.
for multiple different
That's why
reasons.
cancers, yeah. That's just why cancer's cancer.
Just because, like, a lot of the time, and I did a bit of I learned a bit of that during my degree, but there's like when cells divide, like every cell divides but at different rates and things like that. But with cancer, a lot of the things that normally make sure that that division goes to plan are often turned off, right? So we have like many really important genes, like P53 is like one that everyone always talks about, which is
The
like the guardian
guardian of
of
the
the genome.
genome. Woohoo!
But a lot of
That'd be a good
those,
fancy dress costume.
oh
Anyway, sorry.
yeah, that would be great. Oh, should we dress up as P53?
That'd be hilarious.
That would be really cool. Oh, we should do a science fancy dress at some point.
Yes, most creative fancy dress
Yes.
idea.
Oh, we could do that.
Anyway.
Like, get people on the book club to dress up as something sciencey and creative. And anyway.
Yes, definitely.
But things like the guardian of the genome, they make sure that all the processes during cell division go to plan, which means that there's no errors in the replicated DNA, that the cells, basically, that the cells are like nice and sensible copies of each other
Yes,
without
they
anything
only
leading to
divide.
disease. Yes.
Yeah, they only divide when they're supposed to.
Yes.
And yeah, the key thing is making so there's something called the cell cycle, which is like the different phases that cells go through before dividing. And there are various checkpoints within the cell cycle, where everything is, it makes sure that everything's correct, that there is no damage in the DNA that's going into the new cells. And yeah, in cancer cells, a lot of the proteins that control the checkpoints are broken, they don't work properly, and that is what causes the proliferation of damaged cells or
Yeah, so the fast growth of them, right?
Yeah, they just keep growing when they're not supposed to, basically.
And then the other thing that happens or happened with HeLa cells, Henrietta cells, and probably in other cancers as well, is
Yes.
that chromosomes, which are the things in us that hold our DNA, people probably know about chromosomes who are listening, but sometimes it's still wild to me sometimes though when I think, and like I've done a lot of like this stuff over the years, even though bacterial chromosomes are different, I still know what a human one looks like. But to
Yeah.
think, like often when you see that picture of like the strands of DNA and they're like wound up tightly and then make a chromosome, and it's still like that is so cool.
Yes.
So
Yeah,
chromosomes,
like,
sorry, go on.
no, I was just going to give a fun fact
Fun fact,
that,
please.
'cause obviously, like you said, the chromosomes are like really, really condensed. But if you took all the DNA out of one cell, just one cell, it'd be 2 meters
That is
in a
wild.
human cell.
That's absolutely wild. Just one
That's
cell.
like just one cell. So all the DNA in your body would go, I think the kind of the number that's thrown around is to Pluto and back
Oh, yeah, I've
about
heard that one.
6 to 10 times.
Which is wild, but it's almost just hard to imagine because I can't
It
picture
is
how far
crazy.
away Pluto is, but I can picture 2 meters.
Super far. Yeah.
And
Yeah.
that is wild.
Yeah, taller than me.
Yeah, they're
But
much
yeah.
taller than us.
But yeah, I use that in my I know that because obviously my PhD focused on some proteins called HDACs, which are involved in like chromatin condensation and
Oh,
things.
yes, true.
So that was like part of the fun facts that I used in some of my presentations
That's
to
cool.
get a laugh out of the audience.
Did it work?
It did work, yeah.
I feel like it's a really good fact.
It's a really cool fact and it's mind-blowing as well.
Yeah, like for something, I think it's really, really cool for something that's so like for many people, it's the same with like that strawberry DNA extraction experiment. To
Yes.
be able to, if you've never done it, look it up. It's really cool. Because you can do it at home. But to be able to see something or picture something that we
Yes.
can't normally see with the naked eye.
I did a primary school outreach day a few weeks ago and we did the strawberry DNA experiment and those kids were mind blown. It
It
was
is.
great.
It is so great
To be
because
fair, I did it the night before. I practiced it the night before with my mum and dad and
they
my
love
mum and
it?
dad were like, oh.
Oh, that's cool.
My mum loved it. She was like, that's DNA. That's so cool.
It is. It's like something that's so like ubiquitous in like what we talk about, even for non-scientists, that so many people just never see, right? But you can't, like you said, with the strawberry
With
extraction, you
strawberries,
can
you can
see it
just see it, and it is
because
really
there's
easy
so
to do at
much of
home.
it.
There's so much of it. Yeah. But yeah.
But yeah, I like that's what I like about the 2 meter thing is that to you can kind of you can picture that a cell is really, really tiny and you can't see it with the
Yeah.
naked eye, but to think that something is in length really
I
long.
think the number is like the human, the nu a nucleus in a human cell, so where all the DNA is contained, is 6 micrometers
It's so small.
in diameter. And that's how condensed your DNA ends up,
Yeah.
because 2 meters can fit into something that's 6 micrometers. I always think of it like, those slinky toys
Yes. Yeah.
that like stretch out really far, then you let go and they like spring back.
Condense. That's
That
a good
is
way of thinking
my
about it.
analogy for DNA. Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. That's really cool. But yeah, so DNA is
Condensed
condensed
chromosomes.
in
Yes.
chromosomes. And going back to why Henrietta cells are immortal,
Yes.
chromosomes have things at their ends, which are called telomeres. And they too are really important in cell cycle and division because
They
it
are.
basically they're there as like an insurance policy, right? They're kind of ends of the chromosomes that don't actually really do anything, but they kind of protect the rest of the genome.
Yes, so telomeres are made up of, it's still DNA. So it repeats of six nucleotides. My undergrad project was about telomeres.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
This is so
so
cool. We're learning so much about
I
your
know.
science. This is cool.
So yeah, it's a repeat, and it just repeats loads and loads and loads of times,
Yeah.
and there are a lot of proteins associated with it. But yeah, with each cell division, a bit of that DNA is lost.
Yeah, because that's why we
And
age, basically, isn't it?
that's eight why we age. And eventually it'll get to the point where the cell will recognize that a lot of that telomeric DNA has been lost, and they're like, right, guys, time to call it a day. And the cell will just undergo cell death. And it's called the Hayflick limit, and that is how many times a cell can divide before it will die. It should die naturally. But yeah, cancer cells have the ability to bypass the Hayflick limit, so they will just keep divide. And there are a couple of different ways that cancer cells can do that.
Because what I read for, like in healer cells, is that there's an enzyme called telomerase, which is basically able to extend those telomeres. Now, I don't know, is that a process in healthy cells as well? Does that happen?
No, so it happens in, I want to say, embryonic stem cells. So that's why the enzyme exists. So it does have a function. Yeah.
Yeah, because I was wondering, because it's basically turned on, the enzyme is turned on in cancer cells, so they basically, from like what Jen just said, like you're ex basically infinitely extending those telomeres, which just means those cells never
Yes.
get the signal to die.
Yeah, so telomerase adds on more of those six nucleotide repeats. So it never gets to that point where the cell realizes it needs to die. But yeah, so I'm pretty sure it's embryonic stem cells or some kind of embryonic cell where telomerase has an actual function. I'm pretty sure it's stem cells. That would make sense because it's important for those cells to keep dividing. But in healthy adult cells, telomerase is switched off. It's inactive. But yeah, that is one of the hallmarks of cancer is the ability to keep replicating when it shouldn't. And yeah, telomerase is one of the main reasons for that. And the issue is that not just that they keep dividing, but they will, because they've divided so many times, they'll pick up damage and accumulate damage, and they'll be dividing in a damaged state. But that damage is kind of what makes cancer cells so difficult to treat, and that's a whole other.
Because there's a lot of like genetic defects and stuff that get introduced, right, over and over again. And that's why our cells just need to die at some point, because the more times a cell replicates, the more chances there are for there to be damage,
Yeah,
right?
'cause during like replication, during the process of DNA replication, it's never going to be 100% perfect, and that's what those kind of cell cycle checkpoints are for. And they will literally put cell division on hold while they repair any damage in the DNA or any defects that they spot. So if DNA repair proteins aren't functioning properly, that's a big player of what causes cancer. But yeah, Henrietta cells, that was one of the things they found, that telomerase was active. So that really will really contribute to the ability for them to keep growing in the lab outside the body.
Yeah, and that's why they're immortal and
That's
still
why they're
growing.
immortal. Yeah, still going. I don't know, there are processes now where you can immortalize a cell line. Obviously, they've figured out how to, like, what it is. I don't know fully. I don't really understand this side of it, but they've obviously identified how to make a cell line immortal and how to keep it growing
That makes sense,
outside the
yeah.
lab. Like, really, you can, I think that you can probably just take a sample from anyone now and you'd be able to keep it growing. Obviously, like, we have healthy cell lines as well that you use to compare, or just for other, yeah, for us, it'd be to compare like healthy and cancerous
Yeah.
cells. For other types of research, I guess that's just the standard of what
Yeah,
you'd use.
absolutely. Because if you wanted to, like for example, in my sort of field or adjacent, if you wanted to mimic an infection,
Yeah.
it would be easier to do that with healthy cells, because you want to really model how an infection would happen in a healthy
Yeah.
cell.
It's much more accurate.
Yeah,
Like,
because
cancer
you
cells are
have.
just chaos.
Absolutely.
There's so much that's gone wrong in them, then they're not.
There's so many other factors at play that could impact your results, and it doesn't then truly mimic what happens in a healthy human who gets
Yes.
infected. So, yeah.
Yeah. Because obviously, like, the factors that we've talked about as to why Henrietta cells survived are because they were cancer cells. But clearly, there has been things developed now as to why, how to grow healthy cells as well. But
Yeah.
I don't know. It'll all be to do with the conditions that you grow them in and how you culture them. And, you know, every cell line that I've used, you know, different cell lines need different culture media
Yeah.
and different nutrients to be able to grow. And, you know, the ones I'm working on at the moment are stem cells, and they're like very particular about what they need.
Yeah.
They're much fancier than your standard cell line. So there's clearly a lot of techniques that have been developed to not just grow cancer cells, is
Yeah.
the, yeah.
And I would have thought that like a lot of those techniques again were developed based off of what we learned from Henrietta's cells, right? Because
Yeah.
like
Yeah,
it
exactly.
was that sort of the fact that they managed to get an immortal cell line and realize like how important cells were in the field of research to made them realize that yeah, cell culture and that kind of field is really important, and you know, more money was invested in it, and then people
Well, yeah, exactly.
found things. So,
Yeah, it's just this the natural progression of science, I guess.
speaking about the progression of science, I thought it would be interesting, because so the book touches on like a few different things in terms of like scientific advancements that were made because of Henrietta
Yes.
cells,
Yes.
and some of them, like we mentioned, the polio vaccine in a bit more detail,
Yeah.
but I thought it would be interesting, and that not to distract from Henrietta's story, but to kind of highlight to you know, people listening to this, many of whom are scientists or in some field of STEM, to sort of highlight how many different fields and how many advancements were possible because of Henrietta cells. I mean, she's won many Nobel Prizes, for
She
example.
has, yes.
I think three Nobel Prizes. So the first of which were that they were able to figure out how HPV, so human papillomavirus, causes cervical cancer,
Or
which
just
is.
cancer in general, I guess, because it's not, it doesn't just cause cervical cancer either,
What other cancers
which
does it cause?
head and neck.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was, yeah. So again,
That was what your PhD was on.
my PhD was head and neck, and specifically HPV negative head and
Okay.
neck. Because, yeah, super interesting that HPV positive cases are actually easier to treat than
Okay.
HPV negative cases.
That's really interesting, because I think the Nobel Prize that I mentioned is specifically, I think,
What is it?
for
Cervical.
figuring out how it can cause cervical cancer, but I think that's the one we always talk about in relation to
Yeah,
HPV.
because obviously, like, the HPV vaccine that was rolled out, I mean, it's very common I know in different countries it's different. Here it was like 2008, where it was made like a standard for high school. I think I might have been the first year of where we got given the HPV vaccine in school, just the girls, whereas now, and that's why now it's like it's everyone gets the HPV vaccine because, yeah, it can cause different types of cancer, probably others, but yeah, specifically cervical and head and neck are the common ones, and it's amazingly wiped out. It's pretty much wiped out cervical cancer, or well, it's wiped out HPV positive cases of cervical cancer.
Which is amazing,
It's
right?
incredible.
Like,
Yeah, the success of that is just.
so you can see like why that discovery specifically to work out that that virus can cause cancer and how it does that is incredibly important. Like, and to think like specifically, I think why this one is really important as well is that Henrietta died of cervical cancer and now less people are dying of cervical cancer because of her, which,
Because of her,
yeah, in terms of other infectious diseases, HeLa cells also helped us understand HIV better because HIV does not easily infect HeLa cells. And it's interesting as well, more recently, which again, I mentioned, look up something that affected you all, COVID. Affected and infected a lot of us. And HeLa cells were used to work out how SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID, enters human cells. Because again, it actually doesn't easily enter or doesn't enter HeLa cells. But when they expressed the ACE2 receptor on the surface, it was able to. And that a lot of the time is how we do things in science. Like we take something that to determine like a specific thing that does something, you kind of need to add that specific thing to something that doesn't normally allow entry to the virus. And we're like, okay, we'll add that one receptor and now they're able to enter the cells. In conclusion, that's how it enters the cells. And that was really important very, very recently.
It's incredible. Yeah, going from kind of the polio vaccine, which was years ago, to COVID research. Like the spread of things that Henrietta cells have been used for. And like they've been sent up to space to see how human cells react to conditions in space and like how they respond to X-rays, which is just everything, everything.
It's wild. And like we were talking about telomeres and telomerase, and that again, that's another Nobel Prize in for physiology or medicine in 2009, where they used HeLa cells in their research to basically determine how telomeres and the associated telomerases stop the caps from degrading on the end of chromosomes. And that again, like we mentioned, is incredibly important in cancer research, right? And things like that.
And not just kind of age, like aging research, like age-related diseases. There's a lot of research into human immortality. Where is this how we reverse aging? Not quite as simple as that, but
No.
it's like that doesn't just apply to cancer research, that applies to
Just what makes
any
us.
kind of, just kind of an understanding of humanity, I guess.
The third Nobel Prize that HeLa cells won. I'm just gonna keep saying it like that because it wouldn't have been possible without her. Is
Henrietta won.
yes. She really should get given one, like her family. I mean,
I reckon she would have. I reckon they would have given her some kind of honor if, but like that's a big thing, isn't it? That Nobel Prizes
yeah, to
aren't
be
given
alive.
posthumously, to anyone. Like the amount of people that have probably missed out on Nobel Prizes because of that.
That's
It has
true.
happened. Here's another fun fact. It's happened once.
Oh, really?
Yes, because he was awarded a Nobel Prize and he died before the cere just before the
Oh, but
ceremony.
he was told that
But
he.
he was already, so that's the only case where someone has posthumously been awarded
Yeah.
a Nobel Prize. But it's te a technicality because he was awarded it when he was alive, but
He didn't
the
get the
actual
medal.
official ceremony
Yeah.
where that's a yeah. I
Yeah.
don't know the technicalities of at what point you are classed as a Nobel laureate. Again, that's a whole other. But that's the one case,
That's
because
interesting.
that's what people have used for. That's what I think James Watson was like. Oh, Rosalind Franklin would have got a Nobel Prize with us, but she was dead. And it's like, would she though? Don't think she would.
No,
But he used
he
that as an
shouldn't
ex. She
have.
should have done, yeah. But that was his excuse. It might have been, it was one of them anyway. One of the three men that won that Nobel Prize said, they tried to kind of argue that when
Of
asked
course
about
they
Rosalind
did.
Franklin, they said that, oh, she would have got one. But I think she died like 2 years before they won or something like that. And that was what they tried to use as like,
An
oh, she
excuse.
would have got one. But I was like, no, she wouldn't. Shut up. Anyway.
So Henrietta's third Nobel Prize was won in 2014 for the development of a method of single-cell microscopic imaging, which allows us to look at the inner workings of cells to show how viruses infect cells, which again is pretty cool.
Amazing.
So a lot of these are from like a few different lists, which again I'll link below. I've picked some of them out, but they're I picked some others out that are sort of more in my field, just to. Because I think it's quite interesting, and it I feel like I've learned a lot speaking to you about it, and in the book as well. But I think the really interesting thing, again, like we said at the beginning, it's not super like science detail heavy, which is right. But I feel like I've learned a lot about cells and about cancer cells and about cell biology generally. But I think again, like I said briefly earlier, I think it's really important, and I would challenge all of you to sort of look at the lists that we've linked. But also, just one thing that I did is just Google healer and a keyword from whatever area of research, because I did it with a few different things just to see. But whether that's actually biomedical research or if it's chemistry or physics or probably computer science, to be honest, like
Yeah, definitely.
anything,
Like
look it up.
bioinformatics,
Yeah, I
all of
mean,
it.
absolutely. But yeah, so some things that were actually on the list that are microbiology related are that they were used, HeLa cells were used to determine how tuberculosis invades cells, which is an intracellular bacterium, and also how in the 70s they were used to determine how Salmonella can cause infection. And then the thing that I looked up was specifically about Listeria monocytogenes. So I just Googled HeLa, Listeria monocytogenes. And it turns out, again, Listeria monocytogenes is the organism that I used for like one of my first lab research projects in my undergraduate degree. And they also are intracellular pathogens, the bacteria. And HeLa cells were used again to research how they're able to infect human cells.
It's amazing.
But isn't it wild and yeah, amazing to like realize how, like, I can only imagine, like I was just looking at one paper here, but how many of the papers that I've cited during my scientific career have used HeLa cells for so many different
Yes.
things.
I know, like personally, so many, specifically working in, I think with like radiobiology, cancer HeLa cells are used a lot as a gen like almost like a generic, even though they're
Like a
not a
baseline
generic
or
cancer cell line, but they are used, yeah, as like a basic, I can't like they were used in the lab that I worked in Liverpool, even though our focus in that group was head and neck in general. HeLas were used just to kind of look at a generic cancer cell response
Yeah.
to different types of radiotherapy. You know, like looking at like new radiation modalities like proton beam therapy and flash, which is like ultra high dose rate.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, we want to look at how specific cancers respond, because that's the whole issue, is that every cancer responds differently. But just to understand the general workings of how cells respond to these radiation types, HeLa cells are so commonly used as just a baseline of.
And I suppose it makes sense because, like, a lot of the time, and what we do a lot in various different fields of research in different ways, is that we have a cell, like a cell line or a particular organism that we often use as a baseline, just because of we know so much about it. And that's the case with HeLa.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. We understand so much about these. And again, it kind of links back. I'm just linking it back to cancer, but every cancer cell is different. Every cancer cell uses different mechanisms. And we understand so much about how HeLa cells work. We understand a lot about the genetics of HeLa cells. So, yeah, that's one of the reasons, I guess, why they're so commonly used.
That makes sense. The genetics aspect of it is really interesting as well, actually, because so there's a few different things about it, actually, because partially there was actually a controversy. Well, in many different ways, but initially the genome of HeLa cells was published but then redacted because it was published without consent. But since then, there's been an agreement with the NIH and the family of Henrietta to allow access to the whole genome, like in a controlled way for research purposes.
Yeah, I think the problem, obviously, there, the problem is that we know exactly where HeLa cells come from. And in other cells lines, it wouldn't be an issue to have full access to their genome and wouldn't be as much of an issue because we don't know exactly who these cells have come from and, their families. But the issue with Henrietta cells is that
We know.
publishing the genome of her cells is giving access to the genetic information, to some of the genetic information of her family,
Yeah,
I guess.
and that was even when her medical records were published, basically publicly, when journalists and people first started to look into where did these cells come from. That's revealing medical information and breaking so many codes of ethics, whether it's allowed or not. That's just not okay. And that is the same sort of thing with her genetic information now. And I actually find it quite interesting because I was looking into, like, kind of what is the situation now. And actually, although, like, you say that, and it is, like, on the face of it, it is true that because right now in the US, for example, it's slightly different in the UK, but in the US, you are allowed to take tissues for research purposes only with informed consent. But if samples are taken for diagnostic purposes, the research on those samples can still be approved as long as the samples are anonymized, basically, and they have no name or anything connecting them to the person. The issue with that, though, is that genetic information nowadays can always
That's
connect
true.
something to a person and to family members, because if a scientist had the whole genome information of a cell line they were working with, and they put it and searched it against various different 23andMe type databases.
That is very true.
I don't know quite how these things work in terms of can you search things against it, but it's not actually anonymized, is it? Because you could theoretically have a sample of yourself, send it to 23andMe, and find relatives of yourself
Yeah, I
if you were
think
unethical.
yes. And that's one of the major issues with companies like 23andMe is incidental findings. And we did we covered this because obviously my undergrad degree was medical genetics.
Yeah.
So we did a lot of ethics kind of module, like lectures and stuff. And the 23andMe thing was, from stuff like you want to know, the fun stuff, oh, you probably don't like coriander and things, but which is kind of, I think, what people do things like that to, on the face of it, because that's kind of what, like, they want to know the fun things.
Yeah, and that's how it's sold to us as
And
well,
that's how
right?
it's sold, yeah. Which, is interesting, but at the same time, you could send in your sample and find out that you're at high risk for Alzheimer's. And that's not necessarily something that you want to know.
Or know how to deal with.
Know how to deal with. And the ethics of that as well is that who else in your family has that gene,
Yeah.
that mutation?
Who do you
And
then
that's
tell, and what do you
who do
then
you
do
tell,
about
and
it?
where's the responsibility to inform people? And incidental findings are like a huge ethical kind of concern. And the same thing as, if I wanted to know if I had a mutation in one of the BRCA genes, which are like high risk for breast ovarian cancer, but that incident that affects my family, and it's a really difficult thing to navigate. And I think that is a huge problem with like the 23andMe things. But I think, I don't know, maybe I'm just because I'm looking at this from a cell biologist perspective. Like, I think in cancer research, it is important to be able to access the genetic information of the cells that we're using.
Oh yeah, and I think that that applies to
But
so many different
that's,
fields, really.
yeah. And, but I'm fully un like I fully understand that issue with, but I think that is more of an issue with the 23andMe style companies, of how easily they allow that inf the information they have to be accessed.
Yeah, and I think it's just an overall like regulatory and law issue also,
Yeah.
because the fact often, and like we're seeing it so much in various different fields, not just biomedical research, but think about AI and things, that like the regulations cannot keep up with the speed of progress.
Yeah.
And I mean in terms of this regulation specifically, the law in the US specifically, the common rule, which is a set of policies that protect human participants in research funded by the US government, is that law which I've just mentioned, where in 2017, they basically missed the opportunity to make sure that that is more controlled. Because you can argue, and I listened to a podcast episode, which I'll also link, by This Podcast Will Kill You. Where they talked about it as well, and they said that, well, in 2017, we knew that genetic information would be an issue. Like, that's not that long ago. Like,
Yeah.
companies like that were about then, and I think they missed an opportunity to govern that in a
Yeah.
better way. But yeah, the Lacks family, again, this is from that Nature article that I mentioned before, but the Lacks family is advocating for a change in policies and regulations, which includes
Yeah.
that common law
Yeah.
regulation. And I think it's really important, because it's important that informed consent is given, and that like diagnostic samples can still be taken, the patient doesn't know.
Yeah.
Like
Yeah, because you're just thinking they're going to take it for a biopsy.
Yeah, and then they need to
And that's it.
obviously do that, but then research and that can still be approved without the
Yeah.
patient's knowledge. And now you could argue, like from a scientific perspective, you could say, oh, well, but if something really important is found in that biopsy, then it could be really important for research. But
Yeah.
there's a step there where, well, we should then check with the
Yeah,
person it came
inform them.
from that that's okay,
Yeah.
especially if their genetic information is going to be used for research. Like,
Yeah. I think it is a really difficult, it's so difficult to navigate.
yeah.
It's funny that I know you mentioned like the samples are more anonymized nowadays. Because obviously, like HeLa cells, HeLa,
Is Henrietta Lacks.
Is Henrietta Lacks, and that is just how a lot of things were named.
Yeah, that was how they named all of their samples in that lab specifically.
Because I know I've worked with cells like called FADUs, and that's, I think, I assume, is a similar, like, FADU, and they're also kind of given the same, like, the F and the D are capitalized as HeLa, whereas a lot of the samples that I've used more recently have definitely, they're like UMSCC 6, UMSCC 74A, A253, and there's like a name in. So, like the UMSCC ones, that's University of Michigan, squamous cell carcinoma 6. They're much more standardized.
It identifies the tissue type rather than the patient, right?
Yeah, like U2OS is osteosarcoma. Like, I'm just thinking of like SKES1 is Ewing sarcoma. So everything is much more standardized nowadays. So it's interesting to compare. It'd be interesting to look at the samples that do still have like the initials and see the dates on them compared to the
Yeah, true,
dates on the
actually.
ones that have the more standardized naming.
But it, yeah, like it makes so much sense to name it after the tissue type and the reason you're researching it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, at the end of the day, we don't need to know. We don't need to know the initials of, like, I understand with Henrietta's story, it's different because of the injustice at the time and the injustice that happened with her family afterwards. And the information came out about her and her name. So obviously acknowledging that. But I mean, more like with everything, how standardized everything is and how normalized it is now with like how common samples are and cell lines are, we don't need to know the name of the patient.
Arguably, like we need to establish some sort of a balance between making sure that all of these things happen in a controlled and right way, and being respectful and being aware. Like as scientists, like I think one of the most important things is to learn about these things early on, and like learn about it in school. I mean, that's what Rebecca Skloot says in the book, right? She first heard about Henrietta in school, I believe.
Yeah, she was in a lecture and they were talking about cell biology, and her lecturer kind of said, "Oh, yeah, the first cell line came from this woman, Henrietta Lacks, and that was it." And that's what sparked Rebecca Skloot's interest, was I want to know more about this woman. But I think nowadays, what happened to Henrietta isn't how things generally work because of the laws that are in place. I know that there is still, like, obviously, like we're saying with the diagnostic samples.
I mean, there's still injustice generally that I think we just need to be aware of, and I think it's just a good starting point, I think, as a scientist, and that the story of Henrietta and like her life and what happened to her cells in terms of like the lack of consent and then what happened in terms of scientific progress. I think that is such a important story for scientists and for anyone really to bear in mind when we do what we do. That's kind of the main thing, right? Like Henrietta's family have said, they want us to know who she is. And I think telling her story can just set an example and make us more aware of things. And scientists influence policy, and we can make things better just by being aware and doing ethical research ourselves and telling each other to do ethical research, and like we're doing, like telling each other and everyone else to read books like this and read about these kinds of stories, because there are many other stories, by the way, specifically when it comes to racial injustice in medicine and scientific research.
Absolutely.
It's incredibly important. Another such scandal that I learnt about thanks to one of our book club members, Ailsa, during the discussion that I didn't know about. But in the UK, the way we deal with tissue and human material is regulated by the Human Tissue Act from 2004. And that was created because a surgeon at Alder Hey removed body parts and organs from 850 infants without consent and kept them in jars. Let that sink in.
Insane.
And that was not that long ago, by the way.
No.
The Tissue Act was created in 2004 and it didn't happen that long before that. Like, that was way, way more recent than the Henrietta story.
Yeah,
Absolutely
this is
wild.
kind of like, yeah, this is in like the early 90s, wasn't it? Or
Yeah,
just the 90s.
I think I've got it open here. I think it went on. Yeah, he collected children's organs during the period of 1986 to 1996. So, like, we were alive then, like, at the
Yeah.
end, at least.
Yeah.
But he retained organs in more than 2,000 pots containing body parts from around 850 infants. And that was only uncovered because the mother of Samantha Rickard, who died in 92, basically found some inconsistencies, I think, during the autopsy, and
Yeah.
basically dedicated her life to investigating this. And then the regulation came about.
And he wasn't prosecuted for criminal
No,
offences.
I think he lost his medical license, but he was then.
Yeah, he was banned from practicing medicine.
But yeah, he wasn't prosecuted because
Yeah.
the law didn't exist at that time.
Yeah, I suppose the law didn't exist. Yeah.
Luckily, it does now.
It does now, but yeah, that's to be fair, I didn't know about this. I think I'm too young
Yeah.
to obviously like 2004 when
Yeah.
it was at like in the news. I would have been seven, so I
Yeah.
wouldn't have.
Yeah, because I knew about the Human Tissue Act generally, even
Yeah.
though I've not
Yes.
really
Yeah.
come in close contact with it, which I'm sure you have, but I didn't know about that scandal at all.
No. Yeah, I knew about the Human Tissue Act obviously because it's similar to kind of what we work with. It's just about like transplantation, organ donation, and if things are used for research that they're disposed of or used or stored
Yeah.
in the correct way. That's how it applies to science, I guess.
But yeah, like, it those kinds of instances show really that often things happen, like the organ scandal at Alder Hey, or people talking about Henrietta Lacks more, for regulations like that to come into place and to actually
Yeah.
regulate those things better. Because to think that doctor was able to do that without being prosecuted because it wasn't law, like, in the early 2000s.
Within our lifetime.
In terms of other things, about Henrietta as well, specifically in 2000 and in 2020, the Henrietta Lacks Enhancing Cancer Research Act was signed into law. Again, that was her centennial. It would have been her 100th birth year. And
Yeah.
that law calls for the US Government Accountability Office to complete a study that reviews actions taken by federal agencies to help to address barriers to participation in federally funded cancer clinical trials by populations that have been traditionally underrepresented in such trials. And that is incredibly important, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know, and there are plenty of people who are working really hard for that to be the case, because, like, it's a whole new topic, but I think it's one worth people
Is.
looking into. But clinical trials are very, very often not at all representative of the population, and specifically underrepresented populations within that. So any,
Yeah.
any person of color, women also,
I was just going to say, yeah, there's a whole, again, that's a whole other thing, isn't it? But women are drastically underrepresented in things like clinical trials.
Yeah, but it's really good to see that, good is being done in Henrietta's name, and her family is doing a lot. They, again, in 2020, they started the Hila 100 initiative, which again I've linked below probably numerous times, because it's a great resource to find out more about Henrietta's story, and also to be able to support her family's aim to educate future generations on her impact, on Henrietta's impact, and the impact of her cells. And again, like with that act that I mentioned before, is that they really want to promote health equity and justice, which is just amazing. That I think that her family now, and that her name is being used to promote things that she didn't have access to, and her family, like a lot of her close family, didn't, like we talked about. So it's really amazing. There is also the Henrietta Lacks Foundation, which was actually started by Rebecca Skloot. So yeah, that's also another resource.
Yeah, it's got things like how biological materials are used in research
Yeah.
and consent, injustice again across the healthcare system.
Yeah, and I think they want to provide assistance to people and their families who've been affected by such research injustices as well. So that's, again, it's a good resource, and if you're wanting to support, there's a way to do that. One thing I found really interesting slash actually wild in a not so good way also is that during that celebration of the Hila 100, they, like, Henrietta's family did like a tour and attended loads of different events and stuff. And in October 2021, a life-size statue of Henrietta Lacks, which was made by Helen Wilson Rowe, was unveiled at the University of Bristol here in the UK. And it's the first public sculpture of a black woman made by a black woman, which is wild. And about time, really.
It's about time.
But yeah, I think it is really cool how much is still happening because of Henrietta, both in research and, in research justice and bringing awareness to all of those things. And the fact we're having a very long conversation about here,
I know. This is going to be a very long episode.
this will undoubtedly be our longest episode yet, which I think we both knew before we started talking. But yeah, I think it's really important to have these conversations, and I hope you
Oh,
listen until
definitely.
the
Yes, if you're still here.
if you're still here, thank you so much for still being here, and for listening to all the
We
different
should have done it
things.
as part we should have done it in two parts.
Yeah, well, we still could,
We
I
could
guess, but
split it.
it's fine. People can just pause.
That's true. People can just pause. Would have given us an extra week to catch up on the
I suppose that is true. We should have split it a bit more, but I think we managed well to stick to the topics that we wanted to cover.
We did,
And
yes.
we actually, this was probably our most, like, less rambly episode, because I think there's just so much to talk about and not
There is
really.
so much to talk about. I feel like, what have we done? Like nearly 2 hours.
Yeah, we've been here. We've been sat here on this call for 2 hours. Yeah,
2 hours.
pretty
Hours.
much.
So we probably shouldn't keep talking. But
No,
there
and
is
if.
so much we could do. That's the thing, isn't it? There's
Yeah.
so much more to say.
Yeah.
But it's impossible to put into one podcast episode,
Yeah.
even a very long one.
Yeah, even a very long one. And yeah, like, if you want to keep talking about it, I mean, please do, generally, with absolutely everyone. That's that's kind of the point of this, and maybe we've given you some pointers for discussions, and if not, there will be an incredibly long reference list linked in this episode. I've actually realized when I was, because I was kind of doing it a little bit ahead of time because I had a lot of different sources for some of my notes and stuff, but I don't think I've mentioned the reference list in an episode before, even though we have them for every episode. If you are listening to our episodes and you've not looked at the episode description, there is always a reference list for various different things that we've mentioned during the episode. Again, there will be a lot this time, probably a lot more than the previous ones. And we also always provide a list of all the books we talk about that aren't a monthly book. So,
And sometimes even pictures of cats
yes, for our Patreon episode, there
per
is,
Patreons.
for our latest Patreon episode, there is a picture of Winnie the cat. A very cute
Yes,
picture.
she's so cute.
She was cuter in that picture than in the actual
Then in the
episode where she tried
episode
to
when she
attack you.
bit me, little rat bag jokes. Love you, Winnie.
We love you, Winnie.
But yeah, I feel like that's probably a good place to.
Yeah, it's a good place to wrap it up, I think. And yeah, just like we said, to just encourage you to keep talking about Henrietta.
Yeah, and if anyone ever says to you, oh, have you got a good book I should read?
This one.
Give them this one. And there is a film as well,
There is a film. Yeah, that's true.
which is also very good if you kind of want to share the story with people, but they're not necessarily bookworms, or they're not big on reading. There's a fantastic adaptation. It focuses more on, I suppose, Deborah's journey of discovering who her mum was, and but I think it does a really good job of covering the key kind of scientific
Yeah, I think so,
aspects.
yeah.
It does, obviously, it doesn't cover quite as much as the book. And it doesn't cover as much about Henrietta's life, but I think it gives you a really good sense of Henrietta, of who she was, and of the impact on science, as much as they could fit into a 90-minute film. Rebecca Skloot has a cameo
Oh,
as
yeah,
a
she
nurse at
does,
one
yeah.
point, but there's a really, really moving scene where Deborah and their brother Zakaria go to the lab.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And they look at the scientist in the lab. He shows them kind of the liquid nitrogen storage and gets a vial out and shows them. And this is pretty much lifted directly from
Yeah, that's in the book
the real
also, yeah.
experience. It's in the book. And he shows them Henrietta's cells under the microscope and shows them like a fluorescently stained image of her chromosomes. And it's just a beautiful shot in the film where he projects it onto the wall, and Oprah Winfrey, who's playing Henrietta's daughter Deborah, is just stood in front of them, and like they're projected onto her, and she's just kind of, oh my God, I sobbed so much
Yeah,
watching that scene.
it's really
It was
emotional.
just beautiful. And I think the family were quite involved in the film, and Rebecca Skloot was involved in the film, so that's always a good sign,
Yeah.
I think. But yeah, that's an alternative if you don't think someone's going to read the book.
Yeah, true.
Suggest watching the film because it's a very good film.
Yeah. I'm glad we got to read this as part of the book club. I think it was the most perfect book we could have picked for that theme for
Yes.
our 500 scientists to read books. That list, if you want to add another book or if you want to add The Immortal Life again. That list is still open because we're still kind of trying to, we don't know what we're going to do with it. I think we keep,
Just there.
but yeah, I think we, like, so the first version of basically everyone who submitted it's favorite or most impactful book is already on our Patreon. And once we get like a significantly more submissions, I will put it up on Patreon again. But yes, it's really nice to have everyone's favorites, and with this list as well, I'm keeping whether there's multiples of books and stuff. I'm keeping that on there because people have the opportunity as well to put down why it's such an important book to them, and I think that's really important.
Yes.
Especially again for this one. And I think it was really nice at the start of this episode to talk about why, like, when we read it and why it was so important to us as well.
Yeah.
And I think that mirrors what a lot of other people have said. Like, a lot of people reread it rather than reading it for the first time for this, which is nice.
I'm just flicking through the list of the current list that's on Patreon of all the different books that people suggested, and there's such a good variation of things that were
Yeah, because
suggested.
there's some like children's books and stuff, I think, or like young adult
Yeah.
that I think people, yeah, like read when they were younger and stuff.
But yeah, this book, like, yeah, I agree. It was a really, really good choice for that month.
Yeah, to sort of round it up again, talking about Henrietta herself. I think it's really important that we talk about her, and whether you read the book or
Completely.
watched a film, whether you're a scientist or not.
Or whether you just listen to this
Exactly. I
podcast.
think I hope that we've given you an idea of the fact that her cells have impacted all of us in some way.
Yes.
And like specifically if you're in STEM, we have a responsibility to tell her story and to pass that on to future generations of scientists and to say, look, we have a responsibility to do better and do science ethically and to focus on racial justice in science with everything
Completely.
we do. To keep that in mind, I think is important.
Yes.
Wow. Thank you for listening to us talk about Henrietta Lacks and her story for a very long time.
Yes, a very long time.
We do appreciate that you're still here.
Yes, definitely. Thank you for listening.
And yeah, we will speak to you in our next episode.
Yes.
Bye.
Bye.
May is the perfect month to join in with the book club if you've been enjoying the podcast. This month's theme is science and fiction, and we're reading Anatomy, a Love Story by Dana Schwartz.